So how old are you turning?
In 10 days, I'm going to be 34, which is basically 35, which basically means I'm 40, which basically means I'm dead.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
Good evening, ladies and gents, and welcome back to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, an LGBT podcast streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can access that live stream every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can do so by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Our guest today is Marcus Tallberg, an entrepreneur, an author, publisher, public speaker, and founder of Tallberg's Forlag. I'm just going to say that's what it is. He was born and raised in a small town, or in the small town of, and I'm not going to try to screw this up, so.
Trollhättan.
Sweden. Yeah. And now lives in Stockholm with his rescue dogs, Max and Malva. He joins us today to talk about his new book, My Queer Teen Life. And we will hear more from him on the second half of today's program. My name is Tom, and I'm your host. And as always, I'm in the studio with my amazing friends and co-hosts, starting with the first one.
Hey, y'all. Nick or Trish.
Behind me.
Jay.
And.
Good to be with you. It's Chris.
And welcome you all back to
The Dish.
Here we are. So very quickly, just wanted to mention last week we took some time off, and we did so because I developed a really bad toothache. I wasn't able to speak. I had to have oral surgery. And so come Monday, it was just not happening. So we took the day off. And so I hope you guys didn't miss us too much, but we are back, and we've got a lot to cover.
I'm sure they were fine.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Especially not listening to you.
I was going to say you two, by the way. First of all.
I just think you didn't want to record because I wasn't here. I was on vacation.
That too.
And you got a little jelly.
Yeah. Speaking of that, why don't you tell us really quick how that went? You went away.
It was great, actually. All inclusive. So it was nice to just chill, eat, drink what you want, and hang out at the pool. It was a good time. We went for a wedding. It actually turned up being two family weddings.
Wow.
The same day.
Super busy.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. It turned out, originally I know there was like 12, 15 of us going. It turned out to be 40.
Wow.
So.
Well, the bigger the better, I always say.
Yeah, it was nice. It was fun. It was cool to get there the first day because they had like a small family reunion, these blue shirts we wore the first day. So as soon as we all walked in, even the employees were like, oh, you're with the family reunion. Everybody's over there.
Right.
Like, we didn't have to look for anyone. We were just pointed into the direction everyone was at. But yeah, it was a good time. It was fun. Missed you guys, but it was fun.
Oh, well, we missed you too. But I'm glad you were on vacation.
Yeah, that's why we didn't do the show.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
So he's allowed to go on vacation, but I get crucified if I want to take a day off.
Because you have no more PTO. We've discussed this.
I've never gotten my PTO in the past.
Oh, well, Lord, I mean, you've used it all in like the first like year and a half.
Okay, first of all, no.
They're in probation.
No. The first year and a half, I was constantly here speaking cursive, drooling, and breaking glasses. I was here. We know that. You can go back to the first episodes.
And let's not forget winking and
reading from
one-eyeing it. It's one-eyeing it. Like one-eyeing it, not right. Winking. Yeah. Wink is a little.
Yeah.
The one eye stays constantly shut.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you were one eye shutting it.
That's what
you
were doing. I'm accepting that. I was the one who put it out there.
Yeah. Proud of you, though. Proud of you.
I'm going to be reaching for it. Okay.
One of the things that I can't do in joining, actually, why do we all have bottled water?
I know, right? Like, are people watching that?
We're supporting you.
Does Poland Spring now sponsor Gay Talk? No. They're like, y'all need some help. We're going to give you some money. Here's water.
I have an excuse as to why I can't drink, because I'm on antibiotics and I don't want to drink while I'm on them.
Doesn't it amplify?
No.
Well, I mean, I'll probably have a cocktail after.
Oh yeah, the same. Break. I said that right.
But
yeah,
we just ate. I need to. It was digest.
Yummy. It was yummy.
Oh right. Yeah.
It was a lot of food.
I mean, the food was, you know, it was all right.
And now she pulls it back. She complimented me before we were on air, right. But now she's like, well, I can't be too nice.
I ate the equivalent of two cows, and it was delicious.
So Chris is at the store and he's like, how many people will be eating today?
1, 2, 3, 6
I was dying.
So, crazy people.
My answer was 3.5
Yeah, 3.5 I was like, well, we have to finish that.
3.5,
story,
4, yeah, maybe.
I know. I was like, I thought he was saying, like, what?
Yeah.
Well, it was, at first, I thought it was the three, well, Trish, myself, you, and then another half of you.
Okay. He's going, so 3.5 Okay.
But really, it was because I knew Jay was going to be here.
Okay. Well, fuck you both.
I didn't say any. Well, I mean, I guess I kind of laughed at it. And, no.
But this is what we have to deal with, these messes. And how are you, Chris?
I'm good. Yeah. Just working, trying to be out on the water as much as I can. And I got a month before school starts.
Yeah, she's going to be off on the 16th from the show again.
I'm going to Tanglewood.
And yeah, she's going to Tanglewood.
Anyone in the area, they're going to be playing Mavlost from Smetana, Dvorak's Seventh Symphony,
okay, cut his
which
mic.
Is amazing. And there's another one. What is it?
Which one is the music?
Y'all's a bunch of bitches. Oh, my God. Fantasy on a Theme by Thomas Tallis by Rayfon Williams. He is English music, so look it up.
That's amazing. It sounds like it's going to be fun.
It's going to be really cool.
And it's going to be even more fun because you'll be spending it with your new special person.
Steven!
All right, yeah, there is another Steven now.
But it's on the other side of the table.
It is on the other side of the table, yeah. But...
Well, that's good. Well, you enjoy yourself and, you know, make the best of it.
It's going to be fun. And then the next day, I'm going to watch Hartford Athletic. Play against.
Don't be coming back home pregnant. That's all I gotta say.
I'm going with other friends too.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of places you can like do it in Tanglewood.
I know that.
Yeah, slide the phone to that. The left.
I peeped all those trails when we went to see Melissa Etheridge. I know.
I love
Trish, how are you?
She explored them.
No updates.
No updates.
No updates. Nothing.
No, I got nothing. No.
Well, that being said, then we'll move into some stories. I wanted to give a big shout out to New Zealand. New Zealand has been doing a lot of amazing things, not only, you know, country wise, but also the Olympic participants that it's been sending to the Tokyo Olympics. And so we wanted to start off with a couple of stories, two of which center around the same thing, and then we'll talk about, you know.
Wait, before you do that, I have two things.
mute. So first things first, I wanted to talk a little bit about a new bill that's being introduced. This was reported on two or three days ago, in where New Zealand is introducing a bill to outlaw LGBTQ plus conversion therapy in the nation. And I think this is amazing news, especially for the trans and gay community there in New Zealand. And it's welcomed. You know, we're starting to see that trend rise more and more here in the U.S., but we're talking about a whole entire nation now at this point, just saying, hey, we're just going to go and just do it. And, you know, one of the things that I believe, is it the prime minister?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they have a female prime minister. She's incredible.
Is it Jorinda? I can't remember.
You're very close with that.
Right. She was one of the, actually, so what, you remember when they had that mass shooting?
That's what I was already thinking about, how she refused to use the name of the shooter.
Right. But not only that, I mean, she was quick and swift in
with gun reform.
With gun reform, yep, in that country.
Jacinda Ardern? Oh. Dern?
Jacinda Ardern.
I was not even close.
So, so yes, that's her name. But anyway, in this article, it says, you know, conversion practice has no place in modern New Zealand. They are based on the false belief that any person's sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression is broken and in need of fixing, which it's true. You know, we've been talking about this over and over and over again here on the show.
That's also important to point out that it was Justice Minister Chris Fafoy who said that.
Okay. Thank
not,
you.
Not the PM.
Right. So, and congratulations to, you know, well, not yet. I mean, they're introducing the legislation, but if they do pass this, you know, just a quick early congratulations to our people and our friends in New Zealand. And then I wanted to talk about the two Olympians that they sent over to the Tokyo Olympics. First and foremost is Laurel Hubbard. She is, one of the first transgender, openly transgender participants to represent the country in the Olympics, or actually in the Olympics period.
Right.
And she did weightlifting, and I actually spent a good hour this morning watching these programs today. And running around because her presentation was today. And, you know, she did okay. She missed on a couple of the turns, because I think what they do is they do five sets or six, and then they take your best four and come up with a score, which determines where you land on the scoring and whether or not you medal.
Gotcha.
And it's pretty cool to watch. And I'm just excited all around, you know, to see that even in the midst of a pandemic, we were actually able to successfully kick off the 2020 finally
right.
Olympics in Tokyo.
I mean, it's big. I mean, it's not just the Olympics. We had the 2020 Euro Cup. Mm-hmm. We had the 2020 CONCACAF Cup.
Mm-hmm. Say that three times fast.
Yeah, it's really confusing. There's a lot of sports that were due to take place last year that are now taking place, and we're still holding the name to the 2020 because it is the 2020 games, and we're not going to mess up the timeline, like where sports happen or these large events happen every, you know, 2 years or every 4 years. But it's great that we're actually there, even though Japan is super diligent in making sure that there's not another outbreak. So, of course, right. There are no spectators. There are a few amount of probably family members and definitely people from the media.
No. Only media and coaches and trainers. There's no family members. No. They've been doing watch parties from the U.S. to see all of these, you know, for example, the swimmers, all of the gymnasts and stuff, which is incredibly crazy, because to think that they had just announced a month before that they weren't going to have spectators come.
Right.
So a lot of people had to cancel a lot of plans quickly.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Jay, do you watch the Olympics? Do you get into it?
No.
No. Yeah. Okay. Well,
that's that. I don't know. It's weird. I growing up, I played sports. I close to the mouth.
Thank you.
So growing up,
you were just on vacation. Come on. You're used to this.
Yeah, but growing up, I did a lot of sports. I played everything from handball to football. I skateboard. I did gymnastics in school, weightlifting, volleyball, basketball. I got older and I was like, I don't even follow.
She's insane. A Jane of all trades, that one.
Okay. See, I never was able to get into the Summer Olympics. I'm always a Winter Olympics person.
Right, because God forbid it's
something warm.
Something has to do with Canada.
Do they even compete in the Summer Olympics?
Yes, they do. And they're part of this story. Thank you very much.
I'm joking.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, congratulations.
They don't even go there.
Congratulations to Laurel Hubbard of New Zealand for her wonderful representation of her country at the Tokyo Olympics, and also for being courageous and putting the transgender community front and center and letting the world know that we're not going anywhere.
Right.
Can I just say, when you were talking about the LGBT conversion therapy in mm-hmm. New Zealand, I recently read a book called Someday, Someday. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's you know, not based on a true story, but the way it depicts what kids go through when it comes to conversion therapy is so chilling and real and honest. And I think that anybody who wants to learn more about why it's so bad for people, they should read it, because this one individual who was sent away to this camp in Alaska, he comes back and he's, you know, 30 years past that point and still dealing with PTSD.
From being tortured.
And like every time he finds himself in a situation where he's maybe interested in somebody, he hears in the back of his head this guy who ran this camp.
Right.
And just tearing him down. It is a horrifically beautiful story. And I think that everybody, if you're interested in learning more about how it can affect somebody, should check out Someday, Someday.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I mean, it really, I haven't read the book, but it definitely seems like it puts front and center the chilling propaganda that comes from this act that has been knocked down by doctors, physicians, right, psychiatrists. It truly is a form of mental and physical torture.
Right. Yep. And the common denominator is always religion. Mm-hmm. You know, it's driven by someone's belief in the fact that we are not worthy, that we shouldn't be here, that we are a sin, that we should be dead. Mm-hmm. And it's sad. It's sad to see that those who are supposed to be your guardians, the ones that are supposed to love you unconditionally, mm-hmm, force you to subject yourself to such, you know, methods and treatments.
And I think when I was reading this book, there was a thread that I held on to because it was very intense for me to read, because not, right, only was it dealing with conversion therapy, but it was also dealing with another individual who was kicked out of his house, homeless, became a drug addict and started selling himself, mm-hmm, because he had no other way to survive.
Right.
But at the end of the book, there's so much hope because they both find a way out of it and they both find love in the end of the story. And I think that that is important to note, that no matter what our community goes through, there are resources, and this is still happening. And, right, and we need to highlight the fact that, like, if you are in a situation or you're dealing with PTSD from, you know, being kicked out of your home or being put through conversion therapy or whatever it is, there are, you know, different organizations or different therapists that you can reach out to, right, different online resources. It's really, it was a really powerful story for me.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So maybe we could reach out to the author and see if they're willing to join us on the show.
That'd be fantastic.
Homework. Trish,
yeah.
You got homework. This. You got this. And it is important. I mean, yes, we have to, you know, look out for our own community and reach out to people that we know that they might be subjected to such abuse, but also reach out to our legislators, like reach out to your senators, you know, keep pushing. So many states have been pushing or have already outlawed this, but we needed to get to 36, 37. I
mean, 36 or 37 36 states before considered.
It can become a constitutional amendment, essentially, right, to outlaw it. And it's possible when you look at Canada, when you look at the United Kingdom, mm-hmm, when you look at Australia, they're neighbor. They've already been pushing this for some time. I believe Germany's done it. So it is very possible to get this done on a, mm-hmm, federal level.
Right.
But I think the important thing to note again is why it's not about the blanket, this is outlawed. It's teaching people that are putting their kids through this,
right,
why it needs to be, right, outlawed.
And stopping, right, those who are thinking about putting their kids through it, mm-hmm, why this is the wrong move.
What is it going to do to your child?
Right.
The child that you love, that you're trying to fix, how are you going to affect them by kicking them out of the house?
Right.
By putting them through this therapy. They don't understand why it's being banned when they think it's technically going to save their kid.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
They need to be educated.
Yeah, that's a weird term to use, but yes, it's right.
Right. Well, again, you know, great work on the part of the, you know, government in New Zealand and the people there and making the right choice and making the right, you know, move and always siding on the side of love,
right,
which is important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, Chris, why don't you tell us about...
Yeah, so going back to the Olympics.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. That's all right. That's all right.
Well, it all ties in. You know, this Olympian is also from New Zealand.
Exactly. And we're, you know, we cover a lot of, you know, different aspects of the LGBTQ plus community when we're talking on the show. We ramble, we go around.
Correction. This second Olympian is not from New Zealand.
I thought, yeah. So however, I was going to get this. So as Tom mentioned, Laurel Hubbard became the first transgender athlete to actually qualify for the Olympics, which is amazing. Right there was a feat before the Olympic Games even started. She was the first openly transgender athlete to get into the Olympics. And then, so she performed today, but starting last week, Quinn, who is a soccer star for the Canadian women's national team, came out as transgender in September. And last week, they use pronouns they and them, became the first openly trans athlete to participate in an Olympic competition, period, across the globe. Quinn now uses they and them pronouns and only goes by the mononym? Quinn. Anywho, they've played for their country, for Canada, since 2013 and earned a bronze medal with the team at the 2016 Olympics, where they were not open yet. But at this Olympics, they started in Canadians team's first game on July 21st against a host nation of Japan. It was a tie, but Quinn played for 72 minutes in that match.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So congratulations to her again for representing your country eloquently and being a representative of the trans community for the world. It is
important to put out there what they were saying. They feel, you know, very proud and optimistic for change. But Quinn went on to say, change in legislation, change in rules, structure, and mindsets. Mostly, I feel aware of the realities. Trans girls being banned from sports. Trans women facing discrimination and bias while trying to pursue their Olympic dreams. The fight isn't close to over. And I'll celebrate when we're all here.
Right. Right.
And I gave myself goosebumps, actually. Yeah. Usually you do that to me, Trish. I'm like, oh, wow. Mm. So, yeah.
Do you do that to him?
Mm. Okay. When she's on her soapbox. Yeah. Sometimes.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, it's been wonderful. It's about 6:22 p.m. there. So we do have to take our musical break so that we can then prep for our guest who will join us. His name is Marcus Talberg, and he'll join us after this very short break. Not really, but it's a break. Here we go.
She was waiting by the back door, said, babe, we gotta leave town. Get your shit, get your suitcase, your dog, your guitar, cause we gotta go now, cause they're coming. Well, they know our fucking names, yes, they're coming, just the same. Well, I know you don't want to leave your life. You've had some blood and tears, little joy, little strife. But they're coming, well, they're coming down the road. Yes, they're coming, truth be told. And don't forget the whiskey, and don't forget your history. It was never their land in the first place, but they're coming just the same. Got a knapsack full of judgment, hypocrisy and lies. And they're talking so much hateful bullshit, they've begun to gather flies. But they're coming, well, don't look them in the eyes. Yes, they're coming, no surprise. And with so much terror in our past, how are you so surprised it's come to bite you in the ass? Yes, it's coming. Well, it's nipping at your heels. Yes, it's coming for the kill. And don't forget the whiskey, and don't forget your history. It was never their land to sell or trade. No, don't forget the whiskey, and don't forget your history. It was never their land in the first place. I'll meet you at the station where we can get on that train. Head out to the wastelands where we can change our names. Cause they're coming. Well, they know our fucking names. Yes, they're coming. Just the same. Just the same. Just the same. Just the same.
Right. Welcome back from the break, ladies and gents. That, of course, was Amanda Barrick with Wastelands, her debut album, that which released last year in July. It is available on all the major music streaming services, so make sure that you go check them out, or check her out, and check out all of the other LGBTQ plus artists. We have to support community artists to be able to make it in this world. And with that, our guest today is, of course, none other than Marcus Talberg. He is the author of My Queer Teen Life. Marcus, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. You're so many.
There's a lot of us in the studio. So before we get started, we're going to just take a quick opportunity to introduce ourselves to you. So why don't you go first?
So I'm Nick or Trish.
My name is Tom.
Jay.
And I'm Chris.
And this is the cast of Gay Talk.
And my name is Marcus Tallberg, and you pronounced it better than me.
Well,
he did something right there.
Because I have a tendency of mispronouncing a lot of things, and so that makes me feel better. Thank you.
Yeah. No, it's I always have trouble, saying my name in English because, I'm Swedish, and it's actually two words, means Tallberg. It's not tall like you're tall. Tall is actually a pine tree. So my name is a pine tree mountain.
I knew Berg was mountain. Yeah. I knew Berg was mountain. I was like, I knew there's mountain in there. I thought it was great mountain, but that's the German side of me. Sorry.
Yeah.
No, you don't have a German side.
Well, the German language side of me.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Take it easy there.
He's had a little German in him once or twice.
Oh, my God. Oh my Welcome gosh. To Gay Talk.
We're like a mullet, business in the front, party in the back kind of thing.
Okay. Speak for yourself.
Lord have mercy.
Marcus, tell us a little bit about yourself and all the things that you do, because you do a lot of, not only are you a writer, but you also do a whole lecture series and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Right. Yes. I am 32. I know I look like 42 right now because it's after midnight in Sweden. So the
not
light
a year
is
over
very
30.
Dark.
Exactly.
I'm an author. My first book, My Queer Teen Life, which actually is called something completely different in Swedish, came out 2008. And since then, I published 6 books. And I think 5 is in English, 1 is in German, 1 is in Spanish. I do lectures. And I think 2017, I started my own publishing house, an independent publishing house, because I wanted to publish my third book, which is about a transgendered girl. And my previous publishing houses, they said that there's no market for it. And they're like, Sweden is fed up with that kind of LGBTQ literature. But I thought it was too important to not publish. So I decided to do it myself. And I knew that I needed other authors, in my stable or what you call it. So I took my savings and I found 4 other authors, and we published 8 books the first spring, and now we've done over 40 books.
Well, first and foremost, I think that deserves claps.
Yes.
Because literally you went to someone and they said no, and you said the hell with it. I'm going to do it anyway.
Right.
And now I get to do it on my terms.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. Which is amazing.
It is amazing, but it's a struggle as well.
Of course. I mean, progress is always a struggle.
I had my first vacation this year since I started, and it was amazing, I tell you. I just got back from that vacation, and I don't know, what's up and what's down, and,
And then we kept you up until 2 a.m.
Yeah, no, it's actually almost 1. It's 20 to 1 now.
Yeah, because I think we're like 5.
It's 11. It's like 11:40 right there, now.
It's fine.
12:40.
I'm great at math.
Yeah, 12:40. Yeah.
I'm great.
So, Marcus, you said you wrote My Queer Life in 2008, and
My Queer Teen Life. Yeah.
And so you wrote that in Swedish language, and then you translated it to English this year.
Kind of, yes. I didn't translate it. It was an American person, a girl who's amazing, and she did it. I wrote it actually when I was in high school still. I wrote it with Emma Björk, which is my best friend still. We've known each other for 26 years. We were 16 at the time that we wrote it, but we were 19 when it got published, yeah.
Nice. And can you tell us a little bit about what inspired you to write the book and what the book is about?
Sure, absolutely. So basically, I found a competition online, a Swedish book competition that was it was a grand prize. It was guaranteed publishing in Sweden, Norway, Finland, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I have to write. I had to be part of this competition. But it was 3 months to the deadline, and you don't write a book in three months.
Right.
So I knew that I needed help. So I called Emma, and back then she said yes to everything. She was my sweet little puppy. And she was like, yeah, let's do it. And we decided to write about ourselves. So my coming out story, it's based on that book, most basically. And all of the people in the book are real people. They're based on real people, even the parents and so on. I think it's only three people in total that are totally made up. So that's the backstory of it. So the language in Swedish, it's very young because it was our first book. So reading it again, you know, like, oh my god, how could I write it like that? But then when I wrote it read it in English, I was like, oh my god, this is actually a fun book.
That's amazing.
So when it comes to this book and your life, you also lecture, and you have a lecture called Minority Stress and Being a Dandelion Child. Now, does this tie into the book at all? Is this about your life as well? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So yeah, the lecture ties into all of the books basically, but most and foremost, Shattered Glass. And Shattered Glass is my second book. And I wasn't planning on releasing it at all. I wrote it as a therapeutic, I don't know, tool to get over all of the baggage that I've, you know, gathered through the years. But then it became this book I think I have like five different versions of it. But when I found the voice of the book, I wrote it in like 7 to 2 hours because it was like bum, 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 bum. I knew exactly how it was going to be. It's a very short book, but it's a very dramatic book. And it talks about all of the basically bad things that had happened. But it's also a light at the tunnel. There's always hope. And it's intentional that I jump back and forth in time just so the reader will see that it's not always going to be bad. You know, it's going to be something good that comes out of it in the end. So, but it can be confusing if you're not, used to reading back and forth in, you know, in the books like that. But yeah.
So it is me. So I do this, and you can say no, but I want to dive a little bit deeper. Is that okay?
Sure. Yes, so absolutely.
I want to talk a little bit more about, you know, your lecture and what your hopes and dreams are for it. I mean, when I read the description of what it was, and actually we were talking earlier about a book that I had read that was speaking of, conversion therapy and also drug addiction and homelessness within the LGBTQ+ community. And you have this lecture that you speak about, and you bring it to kids, families, and I assume anybody who will book you, but I want to know a little bit more about your experience and why this lecture is so important and how it ties into all of the stories that you're telling.
Well, yeah, that's a big, big question. So Minority Stress is quite a new term, I think, in English. I was talking about another report about this, and he hadn't heard about the term before. But Minority Stress is basically, you know, on top of all of the other stress that we have, as especially LGBTQ people, for instance, we have to come out all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, like for every new person that we meet, we have to come out, or like at least explain that we don't have girlfriends or boyfriends or whatever's. And that's stressful. Work, like interviews, it's very stressful. How will people react if they know that I am gay? Will I get a job or not if they knew if I'm trans? If I'm, you know, like all of these other things. That's minority stress. But minority stress could also be violence, physical and mental. And it can also be just glares, like, you know, walking down the street, holding your hand with your loved ones and expecting basically that people are going to look at you, hopefully in a good way, but most often it's not in most of the around the world. So that is really important to talk about because I was I think it was like 2 or 3 years ago, I was talking to another Swedish reporter, and he was like, why do you always have to bring up the bad stuff? We have come so far. And I was like, yeah, we have come so far, but there's still injustice everywhere. And I mean, like, I am still looking over my shoulder twice right. before I hold my partner's hand. Mm-hmm. You know, like, is this a safe neighborhood? Is there people around me? What kind of people are they? Have they been drinking? You know, I actually got, I think it was 2 years ago now. Yeah, it was the fall, autumn before Corona. I was actually attacked right outside my home, but just because I had been kind of intimate with a date. Luckily, I've been boxing for over 2 years, so I
you fucked them up.
And they,
yeah,
I boxed them back.
That gets clapped.
And I actually called my friend first before I called the police. I was like, "This happened. What should I do?" And he was like, "Call the police." And then when they came, I was like, "I hit them back. Am I gonna be you know, sued now or something? Are you gonna bring charges to me?" And so I was like, "No, no, no. That was self defense. You did a good thing." So yeah, but.
Well, I'm sorry that that happened to you.
That is actually something that I talk about in the lecture as well. Like, there were three cops that came to my place, and we were talking about this incident. And there was one girl, I'm just assuming now, one girl and two guys. And one of the girls and one of the guys were with me at the table. And I was focusing, I don't know about you, how you are, but I feel it more comfortable talking to women. Like,
same.
Especially like cops or something, because I feel like they may accept me more than straight men. I don't know. Maybe it's a prejudiced, but or maybe it's, I'm just built that way because it that's the thing that we view straight people.
I think that's a social norm that we learn as we grow up, especially as gay men.
Exactly. Right. But it's a defense mechanism. I have a lot of straight guy friends, and they're amazing. I mean, totally. So it's not always true, but it's more comfortable talking to the woman. And when she was done talking to me and asking questions, she said to the second guy who was he was in the hallway, I don't know what he was doing, if he had something to add, like if he wanted to ask me something else. And the first thing he asked me is, are you a homosexual?
Wow.
And you know, like, I've been out and proud since I was 14 years old. But in that moment, I was like, do I dare to say yes? Why is he asking me this
question?
Why does
it matter?
Yeah.
You were a victim of a crime. It doesn't matter your orientation.
It does matter because they can look at it as a hate crime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but, you know, like, you're not thinking that logically when you get that question.
And especially after being attacked.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that. Yeah, that too. But so that's also a minority stress, you know, like always. Doubt, like not doubting yourself, but always like rethinking before you're answering, and you know, like that kind of stuff. Yeah.
I'm sorry. In Shattered Glass, you talk about this this theme of hope and going back and forth so that people know that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And when you're speaking about these experiences that you've had, and when you're having these conversations with individuals, how do you flip the script in your lecture to let them know that there is hope while you're still educating them about everything that we're still going through?
Well, first and foremost, I'll tell people that they're not alone, because people tend to keep stuff inside. When going back to that incident, I actually got interviewed in gay media here in Sweden about it. And I didn't do it because I wanted to, like, oh, look at me. I was a victim of a crime, you know, poor me. I did it because I wanted to shed light that it still happens today. Mm-hmm. And actually, 4 people that I know contacted me and said that they had been victim of a similar crime, but they hadn't told anybody about it.
Right.
And one even ended up in the hospital because there is some, I don't know, there's some kind of shame, you know, like being victimized or like being a part of it. And that doesn't mean if you're asking for help or if you're asking, for guidance, or if you know, if you've gone through something, it doesn't mean that you're weak and that you are unworthy. It you know, this happens, and we together can go through it together. Right. Oh my God, I'm so serious now.
No, I mean, that's okay. That's kind of what we do here. We bring that out in people, or at least I tend to do that to people.
We like to say ride the roller coaster of emotions on the show and talk a little bit about everything, because like you said, you know, you didn't go out there and join this TV show to, you know, say, hey, look at me, I'm the victim. You went out there because you felt that by telling your story, you could help others. Right?
Exactly.
And that's what we do.
We talk about real life. Like sometimes, you know, things are happy, but sometimes people do face adversity and discrimination, which is something that you had gone through, and we've all faced it. And it is something important to shed light on and really discuss and, you know, dive into it to make sure that, to do our best to make sure it doesn't happen to someone else in the future.
Exactly. That's the thing. Like if, because I think that if you look at statistic, there is so much that dark numbers, especially when it comes to violence against men. I think that men in particular are more afraid to speak up than others. And I feel like, you know, I was a victim of a rape as well when I was 13, and I didn't speak out about that until I think it was four or five years ago. And back then I had to call my dad, and I was like, just so you know that in the Swedish news there's going to be a story about me talking about this, and I want you to hear about it from me before you and it was hard to talk about it, because you know it's very traumatic. I've gone through, what is it called? Cognitive behavioral therapy, I think it's called.
Yep.
And I had suppressed that experience, that what happened to me, until I sat and talked about it with a psychologist. Because I thought that I was going to go there and talk about, you know, my past, you know, specifically my family history with my mom, you know, what Shattered Glass is based off. And then we were talking about my inability to have, say, healthy relationship. And it's because, for so many years, I had trouble connecting love and sex. For me, they were two completely different things, because what happened to me when I was 13, sex was just a need for that man. He was over 40. I don't know how old he was actually, but way past 40. And so that was the idea of sex. Sex was just something. It was just like, you know, going to the bathroom or eating, you know, like it was just a chore or something that was selfish. So that's how I was towards a lot of men for so many years, until I sat in that room and I was like looking at myself and like, oh my God, you can actually combine the two. And after I did that, my relationships have become better. The sex has become better. Yay. Well, oh my God, I mean, I don't know. That was way off topic for you.
No, that's exactly what we want to hear on this show.
But the important thing to remember is that one of the manifestations of trauma, one of the first things that manifests when you experience a traumatic event, is the fact that, you know, you start to think and you compartmentalize reasoning of, is it me? Did I do this? Is it my fault? You know, do I talk about it? Do I not? Other things that happen too is that you learn to store away some of these memories so that you can think that you can go through life and living life and think that it won't affect you because you hid it away. You put it away.
Right.
And sometimes, as you said, you had this conversation with the psychologist, and this is why I believe having conversations with therapists and psychologists is important. It takes one person to trigger that memory, right? And to bring you back to that place of trauma, to really talk it out and to really bring it out and for you to work through that and come out of it on the other end much better than you were before you went in.
Right. It doesn't even have to be a person. It can be an instance, a sound, you know, a color, just something that will wake that up and bring that why question back to your mind.
Right.
Yeah. But important thing is that when that happens, you're not supposed to hide it again. Because like you said, you have to work through it. And I believe that I am a better person today because I have dared to go through that extremely bad experience, you know, like talking about it. I mean, like when people ask me about the rape, it's like I am reciting a drill manual now, because I know, like, I've said that story so many times. It's still awful what had happened to me, and I etc. But it's like talking about it, it can put you at an arm's length at the same time as you embracing it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like, yeah. Because like, you have to acknowledge it. You have to go through it. You can't ignore it completely, but you still have to keep like a distance. Don't become your past. Don't become the trauma. You know, right. Like, you have to deal with it as, oh, I don't know. Like, sorry, my English is not my first language.
It's okay. Take your
You're killing it. You're either, killing it.
Fine. Yeah. but yeah. But I hope that makes sense in some way.
No, it does. Like, and I think it's actually something you said that was really powerful to me was the fact that, you know, men especially, I feel like, have such an adversity to seeking help. And honestly, like, looking at themselves and saying, I need the help. I recently had a conversation with a good friend, and I'm not going to mention names by any means, but he's in a long-term relationship, and they have not had intercourse in a very long time because his partner is dealing with some PTSD and some, you know, but he was afraid to get help. And just a couple weeks ago, this person had called me to let me know that they had a conversation with their partner, and their partner rolled over and said, I think I'm ready. I think I'm willing to go and see somebody. And he said to me, even if we don't work out, me and this individual, I'm just happy that he's finally seeking help for himself so that he can be happy.
Yeah. And that's great. I've been together with my ex, and he needed to talk. He was that kind of person that it was like, no, I don't need help. I can do it all on my own. But you can see, and in every fiber in him, everything that he does and say and react, he does need to speak to somebody. But you know, like me as a partner, I can't say that, because like a word from the partner, it cuts
deeper
than a stranger or a someone else. So I am so happy that he understood that on his own, like your friend's partner. Because I feel like you have to decide for yourself. Like you can't force someone else to be better. They have to want it, and they have to understand like why and how. They don't have to understand it, but you know, they just need to understand that they have to come up with it themselves. Mm-hmm. Because you can't help somebody that doesn't want to be helped, you know?
That is true.
Yeah, the saying out here is you can bring a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Right. Exactly.
It's tough, because sometimes it's even harder than you realize that you're trying to get this help because you know it's needed. And again, you have a partner that's resistant to it, and you have to kind of try and work your way around it to make, you know, so they can see it the way you see it. Hey, this is affecting both of us, not just me or you.
Right.
It's tough, but it's amazing.
Well, and it's also, you have to think about, like, I always say that you have to see people as, how do you say, signal och en mottagare, like a signal and a receiver. Does that make sense? Like,
yes.
Like you send out a signal to someone, but they have to be
receptive. They want to accept
what you're saying. Yes. And if they can, then you have to find another way to say it. But like my approach to it all was that I'm talking about it in lectures instead, like trying to normalize it, trying to talk about it. Like I am open about having taken antidepressants. I'm talking openly about depression and anxiety because I want to normalize it so that people think that, okay, maybe it's not that bad. I feel this way, or I recognize myself in this. Maybe I should go talk to someone as well.
Well, all I wanted to say is, first and foremost, I am sorry that you had to go through these experiences in your life, because I don't think that any human deserves that. And but I'm also very proud of the fact that you have chosen to use your experiences, whether negative, in such a positive way to help others. And not only that, but also help yourself. And I think that that's huge. So thank you for sharing that with us, and for being brave to tell your story and to help others. I want to go back to my queer teen life. Okay. Obviously, this book came out, and I want you to tell me a little bit about what your hopes are for this book. What do you think that, what do you want this book to actually, what message do you want this book to bring to those that read it?
Well, hope. Actually, you know, like, most of the people that read the book are not young queer kids. It's actually moms. So moms are a huge audience for that book. And I get messages or DMs from well, moms, not much dads, but moms in particular, that understand the topic more after being reading the book, because it's written by a 16-year-old, and it's very honest, you know, like in the language. I hope that, I mean, like, you know, Love, Simon, and you know, when it came out as a movie, I was like, another coming out story? Do we really need a coming out story? And then I was like, but yes, we do. Like, every generation needs a coming out story. And like, not everyone has the same coming out story. And, you know, like, one person can have so many different coming out stories because, you know, you meet different people. So I just want to normalize everything. And you know, it's a fun book. Keep it light, you know, like, it's not dark or anything like that. It's a fun, he's so goofy, Matthias. He's like, he's so stupid. So like, I mean, like, it's based on me, so I guess I was that stupid when I was a teenager. But no, like, what I hope that audience will bring from it is hope and more acceptance of others. Yeah.
I think that's great. I think that's wonderful, because, you know, it's almost like you're providing a blueprint for parents and for children and youngsters that are looking to, you know, how to navigate coming out, right? Because this is, in a sense, your story about how you navigated coming out, interacting with people and others. But you said something very interesting to me. You said, you know, you have a lot of mothers that are reaching out to you, but not many fathers. Why do you think that is?
Well, I don't know. I think that that's what we talked about before. Right. Like, men, like, I am no doctor. I'm no psychologist. So please don't quote me on this. But I feel like...
I'm taking notes.
Like, yeah. But I feel like men are taught to behave in such a, in certain ways. And I feel like moms are more receptive of seeking advice. Like, I think it's a proudness question. Because like, my dad, for instance, I love him. And I've never actually come out to him. He came out to me. He didn't come out to me. That's how, no, he's not gay.
he said, are you gay?
Yeah.
So he approached you.
No, but like, there was, yeah. Okay, let me tell you this story.
I am loving this.
So like, I was at, I came home the day after I'd been at a party, and I was 15 at a time, so obviously I was not allowed to go to parties. And I was hungover, and my mom was really furious because I hadn't spent the night at home, and we were going to go to my grandma. And she took my sister and said, like, let's go to the car and wait, and told my dad, like, he could, like, prepare me, and so that I will be in a, you know, way to leave. And I was such a drama queen. I locked myself into the bathroom and I was crying and I had makeup on, so I had mascara running down my cheeks and like I screamed.
Trish!
And like my dad was like trying to calm me down, and eventually he did. So he managed to get me unlocking the door. I went out and like I slammed the door behind me, and he just followed me and took me in his arms, and he gave me a hug and he said, "I know what you are, and you're forever my son, and I will always love you."
Shut the fuck up.
I'm gonna start crying. I'm
crying.
He cries a lot.
That's our yeah.
This is our emotional, yes.
our emotional bag.
Well, kudos to you. You know that. You know what they say about emotional people, that they are more intelligent. So keep that.
Well, it, yeah, does, it didn't work for her, but all right. But that is incredible.
No, but so that's my dad. But I mean, when he had a couple of years ago, he held a speech at a party about my relationship, but well, it was, you know, a celebratory party, and he talked about, you know, when Sweden first legitimized gay marriage and adoptiveness and, you know, like stuff like that. And so he had found out all of that stuff on his own, but we had never had a conversation about it. The closest conversation about it was when he accidentally cruised a guy for me.
Okay, do tell. Yeah.
So it was a long time. I think this is like 2009 or 10 or something. And he and his now wife came to visit me in Stockholm. I'm from the West Coast, close to Gothenburg. And okay. We were
where Hans
bar,
is from.
And I got a text message from a guy that I had found online, and he had forgotten to RSVP to a party, so he couldn't come inside, and he was all dressed up, and he wanted to be with somebody. I was like, I felt bad for the kid. So I was like, "Dad, is it okay if this person comes along with us tonight?" And he was like, "Yeah, sure." And they hit it up right away. And they were like ordering beer after beer. And I don't drink beer. So me and his wife was like, "Okay, one glass of wine. Thank you." You know, and then the wife and this guy, his name is Axel, they went out to smoke. And when they came back, Axel, like, "I chose to be gay," because like, who wouldn't choose to be gay? It's so fabulous. You know, it's better people, you know, all of that. And my dad is like, "But you don't choose to be gay." And Axel was like, "But yeah, no, of course not. But I do this, this, and this." And they had that conversation that me and my dad was supposed to have when I came. You know, like, so I was just sitting there listening, but I was such in awe of my dad at that time. Like, that it's those three things that I remember from him. And like, even though he was an ass when I was in high school and during you know, their divorce and so on, we have rebuilt our relationship, and I believe that we are closer than ever because of that. We have been able to talk about it, and we both have like acknowledged what has gone wrong and how we have behaved, and you know, in order to move forward. So yeah, that's the hope that I want to bring from Shattered Glass. Like, no matter, like, some relationships are going to be broken. Glass is the topic of the books, and I say that in the book, that if you break a glass, that you drink from, yeah, and the glass jumps, and you can't really put the glass back together 100% perfectly, because right, you know, the glass is so made of like so much small particles. So even if you glue it back together, it's not going to be 100% perfect. And then I shed a light on it in Being Alice, because in Japan they have a tradition that if they if something breaks, for instance, a bowl, they use gold or silver or platinum and mm-hmm. to mend the cracks, and it becomes something new, something beautiful. Right. So that the broken thing has become something much more
than what it
prettier,
was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
gives it, it gives evolved. A new meaning.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I think that's basically what I feel like, because yes, I've gone through traumas and bad experiences, but at the end of the day, I feel like I've learned something from it. And I feel like if I can use that to help others, then that's what I have to do. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
I think dad deserves claps.
I think so too.
I also want to just meet your dad.
Yeah.
So I can be that person sitting there where you're like, I'm supposed to have that conversation with him. Buddy, shut up. So really quick before we wrap this up, I know you have a new book coming out in February. I don't know if you want to plug it or talk about it.
Sure. It's not... Well, it is gay related in it. It's called The Orphan. It's out actually. So it was lost.
Last February. Okay.
Yeah. It's called The Orphan. It's a post-apocalyptic urban fantasy. It takes place way, way in the future. And it came to me, you know, like, I don't know if you know about the climate and, you know, the changes that's happening.
This is America. We don't pay attention to that. So yes, I don't know what you're talking about.
I was like, us four know about it. Us four know about it. But yes, it is a thing. It is a thing for our listeners.
So it's basically based on that. Like all of the ice caps is melted and there is new societies and people with powers, because I am a sucker for like witches and stuff. There are no witches. They're just powers. They are more like mutants, more like, you know, X-Men than Harry Potter. But yeah, so it's based on it's about Freya, and she's grown up in an orphanage and she has to save it somehow, so she ends up getting a military education, and she learns about all of the secrets that the government has kept, and yeah, so it's based on that. And there is a character that is gay, and he's not coming out. It's just like in this society, I don't want to have the injustice against, like, you know, blacks and gays and, you know, everything like that. The minority group that is being targeted is the people with powers. So being gay is super normal. There is even a lesbian couple adopting a kid from the orphanage and, you know, stuff like that. So
And the book is a trilogy?
Yes, it is. So the sequel is being translated right now, and the third book is not even written in Swedish. It's almost done. So, yeah, but the first book is out. Yes.
In both Swedish and English?
Yes.
He's going to get the Swedish copy. I'll get the English one.
Right.
Yeah.
I will.
And then you can,
compare.
Well, you know, I want to take the time to thank you for, first of all, staying up till 1:30 in the morning to speak with us. I know it's very hard to do, especially after coming from, you know, a holiday, right? Because you went on vacation. Yeah. And so thank you for taking that time. But before we wrap up, just very quickly, I wanted to touch base. Talberg,
Forlag. Yeah. Okay. You're trying to say the Swedish company name.
Okay. And so this is a collection of books, not only from you as an author, but other authors that are part of this particular publishing company that you created. Right. And so all of these books that we're talking about today will be available on this publishing platform as well.
Well, yes, in Swedish. So Talberg, we're actually creating an American, not version of it. Well, you can say version. So it's going to be called Talberg & Co. So we're actually right now in the process of getting an ITIN, an EIN number, and a bank account, like all of that right. stuff. Yep. So it's going to be an LCC. But yeah, so that's the company, the publishing house that I created when I wanted to publish Being Alice. And it's not all only LGBTQ+++ stuff, because I wanted to talk about like getting role models in all kinds of minorities. And I feel like, why should I, you know, support gay rights but not women's rights or Black Lives Matter? So, you know, like, because we all matter.
Right.
And so I always say that, you know, as a white heterosexual cis man, it's so easy to get, you know, your identity because you are represented everywhere, you know, right. in commercials, in books, in movies, in music. But if you're not out there, if you're not represented, it's so much harder to get, you know, to understand who you are and to find like your group of people or like people who think like you or like accept you. So that's the niche of the company. So we're talking about, we say function variations. I think you call it disabilities, but we think that that's a negative clang to the word, right. you know, because yes, a lot right. of them have only function variables, we say. We have done a lot of women, strong women characters. And like recently we had Adiba Barney, who's actually, as I was in English as well, she's living in the US. And she is 43, and she 6 years ago, she was diagnosed for the third time with cancer, and they basically said that you're gonna die within 5 years, and she's been living now for 6 years and is going strong. And she's talking about surrogacy. That's a big topic here in Sweden. It's mm-hmm. very, very loaded, surrogacy, and it's not legal. It's the last thing on the gay agenda here in Sweden,
right?
And she's so inspirational and a fantastic role model, and so that's the kind of people that we want to work with and produce their stories. Yeah.
So it sounds like you're going to have a very, very healthy choice of supportive stories that people can read on your publishing company. So we're looking forward to hearing more about more of the work that you're doing, not only with yourself, but other artists. If they want to come on, just let us know. We have a history of having really good relationships with authors from Sweden. Yep, so we hope that this invitation and you being on the show leads to that type of relationship. And we look forward to featuring more of your work on the show at some point in time in the future as you keep creating.
And don't be surprised if I show up someday. Because
I think I like him better than Hans.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, he's charming. He's charming.
Well, I will tell you, one
Hans
of our other...
Hans is cranky at this hour in the morning. Are you kidding me?
Well, I mean, when Tom doesn't record the show and then we have to redo the whole thing.
I'd be cranky too, but yeah.
So, Marcus,
we're talking about Hans from Frozen, right?
No, Hans M. Hershey.
No, I'm kidding. I'm Hans from Frozen.
So we have a fellow, author that lives in Sweden,
Gothenburg,
close to Gothenburg. I think he lives in one of the islands. His name is Hans M. Hershey, and he's published a lot of material, and he joins us every single time he publishes a new book, and we love him to death, and we hope that we could get to that point with you as well. I think you're fantastic. I think the work that you're doing is important, and we would like to continue featuring that work, because I think your message is just brilliant and amazing.
Thank you so much. I would love to be back. I would love to come and visit you guys as well.
Please do.
We're in the U.S., so if you're ever doing a book tour in the U.S., hit us up. If you're in the New York City area, we can definitely make that happen.
Awesome. And I also followed three of you on Instagram. You're four, but I only found three on your webpage. So,
am I one of them?
Oh, that's because I'm not included in that stuff yet.
Oh, me? You followed me?
I followed everybody.
Jay is relatively new. We do need to add you to the website.
Right.
And get him an actual chair. I don't know if you can notice that he's sitting in a plastic chair.
They have me in a plastic lawn chair.
We're all in leather. I'm over here lounging.
He got a microphone. We ran down the street for his microphone, okay?
Oh, that I got to get.
Children.
They have me on a lawn chair.
Stop airing our dirty laundry.
Dirty laundry.
To our guest, a first-time guest.
He's Swedish. He's going to love us.
Oh, Lord have
mercy.
Yeah,
I do love you.
Thank you.
Well, listen, my friend, thank you. Once again for joining us so late in the evening on your end, or in the morning on your end, and let's connect and let's bring you back on and talk about some of the other amazing work that you're going to be working on. And thank you once again.
Thank you so much, and good night or good day.
Of course. I don't know how much it translates, but I'll say tak, hade.
Tak, yes, that's beautiful.
Bye. Well, ladies and gents, that of course was Marcus Talberg. He's the author of My Queer Teen Life. So make sure that you go check out the book. We're going to have all of the information, his website, his social media is all on tonight's post. You can actually, you know, just go right to the post, click on it, contact and connect with the author. And it would be super, super amazing. So thank you so much to him for joining us, and go check it out tonight once we publish. So guys, what an amazing show. What an amazing guest. I think it's incredible that, you know, through the show, we have managed to somehow find a way to connect with people from all over the world.
But also, thematically, this show is kind of connected the entire time.
Yeah, really.
Time.
It's like almost like, it's almost like we planned it. We but don't. We never plan anything. Just sometimes it becomes really cohesive.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Not often.
Correct.
Really not often. Right. But this one happened to really be so cohesive.
Yeah. That's awesome. I know, and he's incredibly handsome.
Yeah, I know.
Of course.
Very easy on the eyes. So, you know, you learn to perk him up and just pay attention. So, fantastic.
And the $30 I spent studying Norwegian apparently worked, because what I said to him translated.
That one phrase.
And that did, not- I did. I said, thank you. I said, thank you. Goodbye. Or it means like have it. But I said, yeah, you know.
When you
of course you said have it.
He got it. Trish. We're trying to keep things nice.
We were. Yeah, you're right.
So. I thought he was good. Anyway, so let's wrap this up so that we can bring it home. Unless anybody has another story they want to quickly cover, we're going to move on.
I just have two quick things.
I'd rather fucking hit you.
I'm joking. We can close it out. Right. Unless Jay has anything.
No.
Mama Kim's Minute.
All right, Mama everybody. Thank you. All right, Mama Kim's Minute. Number one, passengers cheer a woman making anti-gay remarks gets dragged off a plane.
Yas, queen.
Number two, Montana man convicted of consensual gay sex in 1994 won't have to register as a sex offender. Number three, Jamie Lee Curtis will officiate her trans daughter's wedding.
Which, that just happened recently.
Really? Yes. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, she just recently announced that her daughter came out as trans.
Yep. You know, she can do anything. Jamie Lee Curtis. I mean, love that woman. If she could fuck up Michael Myers, she could fuck up anyone who comes at her. So you get it, girl.
How did I know you?
Oh, because I fucking dun 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 dun. Then she shows up and she's like, mm-mm.
Michael.
Yeah.
This is my daughter's wedding.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
No, the other thing, too, is that I believe this is still in the works. So y'all remember Sarah Cunningham,
mm-hmm.
right? She's the free mom's yep. hug.
Right.
So Jamie Lee Curtis is slated to play her in her...
We talked about this.
In her movie.
Yeah.
In her real-life movie about the free mom's hug.
I think we said this last time, she would be perfect for it.
I agree.
Like, no one would fill those shoes or heels or flats or moccasins or German shoes, whatever. No one would fit it better than her.
I remember she did a movie with...
I can't remember the name. Clogs.
Chancletas.
Chancletas. Yeah, those are not German, but those are the Puerto Rican shoes. Yeah, that's
she
right.
She made a movie. It was her and Richard Gere. What's the other guy? Mel Gibson. It was called, I thought it was called Far and Away, and where the guy was like frozen cryogenically and then he comes back and it's like 30 years later and he meets her child. Do you remember this movie?
Yes,
and then
I
in
can't
the
remember
end,
the name. Yeah.
He finally gets to see the love of his life again as she's like a lot
forever
older.
Forever young.
Forever young. Thank you. Far and Away. I know it was something F.
Google.
Yeah, but it's great. It's
just
great.
Like Tom, forever young, right?
All right, mister.
Yamol!
Literally cannot.
So, on this day in gay history, for the first time, a United States president signed an executive order including the words sexual orientation. This was August 2nd, 1995, of course, in D.C., our capital. President Bill Clinton signs the executive order 12968, which establishes uniform policies for allowing federal employees access to classified information. The order includes the statement, quote, "The United States government does not discriminate on the basis of race,
color, religion, sex, national origin, disability, or sexual orientation in granting access to classified information.
While in the same breath, allowing the military to sign Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
You know,
can I also say, what was that physically, what did he say instead of disabled? We just were talking about it.
Variable. Oh. Something variable. And
the way they
ability, refer to it. Ability, what?
Variable
abilities.
Something like that. But yeah. I think that, like,
that's amazing. That's
yeah, I really actually like that. It made a lot of sense. Yeah.
Well, Sweden is.
Well, the way it's translating like that to us, but it's basic. Yeah, it's so.
But that I like their terminology better for it.
Yeah, because disability makes it look like
it sounds like you're doing something wrong. Yeah, you have a fault to you. You have something wrong. Yeah.
Right. I just think, in general, when you think about some of the laws and some of the way that a lot of Europeans, but especially people in Sweden speak, they do it in a very thoughtful way. How they describe things are done so in a very thoughtful way, so that you're not offensive, right? In America, we don't care.
Well, they're just caring people. I mean, remember when we went to see Hans?
Well, no, Hans is, I love Hans and he's amazing and all, but him being caring.
Even when we went to New York.
Hans, we love you.
When we went to New York to have dinner with Hans, remember the horse that was drawing the cabbage.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Cinderella.
The carriage. He was like, yeah, that would be illegal in Sweden.
Cinderfella.
Right. He was saying that would be illegal in Sweden because of like animal brutality. And we've made strides. I mean, we used to use the word handicapped, even though we still use it for handicapped like parking. But handicap is like a derogatory term. Like someone is literally holding their hands out with a cap to get some money. So like we're still far behind, but we are progressing, obviously. But there are hurdles that definitely need to come, just like we were talking about with what was their Marcus? Name? No, their name.
Warren Hubble?
Not Quinn.
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 Okay. Yeah, right. The Canadian.
We'll celebrate when we're all there. Right. We'll keep working. We'll keep working. We will persevere, and we will celebrate when we're all there.
Fantastic. All right. Well, ladies and gents, thank you so much for joining us for today's episode. If you love the show, make sure you go subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcasting service. By doing so, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite device or web browser as soon as our episodes are published. You can also support us on Patreon, which allows you, our listeners, to support the show with a monetary donation, which we collect monthly and can be in any denomination of a dollar or more. So I'm going to toss it up to
Jay,
maybe?
I guess it's me. All next week, we welcome It's All About the Dish.
Oh, Lord, have mercy.
Unless,
I love it when I do that to him.
Unless Mix confirms a guest.
Right. We're still working on trying the logistics of confirming one of our guests to be a part of the show. So we don't know if we're going to have a guest yet. Trish, would you like to thank our...
Oh, I forgot to put that in there.
That's okay. Do you want me to take it?
Yeah.
I can. Well, I want to take this opportunity to once again thank our guest tonight. His name is Marcus Tallberg. Of course, he is the author of My Queer Teen Life, and a lot of insight, a lot of beautiful bravery displayed in today's episode. And thank him for sharing and being so honest with us and our listeners. And we hope that we could work with him again. And like we said before, all of the information for his social media and of course his website and access to the book itself will be on tonight's post. Anyone else?
Is that me?
Go for it.
Do I have my PSA now? Doesn't matter if you're Puerto Rican, Swedish, Canadian, or Trish, always put a rubber on it. As always, ladies and gentlemen, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under audio podcast. It is also available as a free download on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher Radio.
I just have one more thing. Thank you.
Oh, I thought it was going to be mine.
Get the future method today. Each time you clean out with water or enemas, delicate tissues are harmed and cells are damaged, increasing chances of injury or STDs. The first of its kind, doctor-developed formula gently cleanses before you play without hurting your bum. Visit futuremethod.com to purchase your life-changing bum cleanser today.
And then...
put a rubber on it.
Right.
You can find us on social media, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0, Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0, Twitter at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at Gay Talk 2.0 at Gay Talk 20.com. Tom, give it a try.
All right. And if you need to reach out to us, just head on over to our website, click on the Contact Us tab located at the top of your web browser. There, you can leave comments, suggest topics, submit a question for the cast or an individual host, or you can even submit questions for our guests as well that we've had on the show. You can also call us and leave us your question by via voice message. You can call 334-GAY-TALK. And do that there.
Unless you're me, because they'll hang up on you.
Right. And then you need all of the digits. If you need all of the digits and, you know, and you're not Chris, you can call 334-429-8255. Don't forget that we do stream live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Ladies and gents, that is our show. Thank you. And y'all have a good night. Bye. Bye.
Howdy.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.